Erev Tov, everybody. I want to welcome everybody on behalf of Torah Motion to our continuing many, many Shirim online. It's a pleasure to see everybody, hear everybody, and we look forward to learning with you every day, pretty much. And it's a pleasure, Rabbi Et Shalom, who taught one of the classes before Pesach on Pesach. This is going to be please God, we'll have every Thursday night a Parshat HaShavua Shir. We figured, and the idea is to have rotating speakers. Rabbi Et Shalom has been teaching Torah for many, many years in many capacities. As you heard, lives in L.A. He's the Rosh Beit Midrash and Shul Hevet High School. He attended Yeshivat Har Etzion. I just read your article not long ago in the journals they put out, in the new book they put out recently from the yeshiva. And I want to thank you for coming, and a pleasure to be learning with you. And Vakasha, Rabbi Et Shalom, it's all yours.
Okay. Thank you, Rabbi Kelman. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm going to disappear in about 1 minute. I'm going to introduce the shiur, and then you're going to see something way better than me, although the view is good. As you could tell where I am, it's still daytime. It's 5:32 now in LA, and this is about as far outside as we're allowed to go, our back porch, but it's good. And I'd like to address this week's parasha from two perspectives. First perspective, this week's parasha, double parasha, Parshot Tazria Metzora, is traditionally ignored. And the reason it's ignored is a very good reason. Three reasons really coalesce. One is that the laws of Tzaraat are very intricate, are very abstruse, are very hard to understand. And the second thing is, tied in with that, is they are absolutely of no practical application to us today. We don't identify Tzaraat. We don't have any of the rituals associated with Tzaraat. Clearly, that all depends on a mikdash, and it depends on proper kohanim. We don't have shiluach arim. We have very few cities that we can identify as walled cities. So many different rules about Tzaraat which don't apply. And the third thing is, to be honest, it's kind of an uncomfortable topic. I can even whimsically tell you a story. It happened many, many years ago, and I was teaching in a school, lovely school, that had its student body was mainly made up of kids from a Reform synagogue. And one of my Talmidot, great Talmida, before Pesach break, asked me if I would help her with her bat mitzvah speech. I said, sure, I can't come to your bat mitzvah, but I'll be happy to help you with the speech. And I asked, what parsha is it? She said, Parshat Kedoshim. I said, oh, Kedoshim, that's a home run. That's easy. So I thought about it over Pesach a little bit, what would be appropriate. And then I got her invitation during Pesach vacation. And the invitation indicated that her bat mitzvah was going to be on Parshat Tazria. So I came up to her the first day back and I said, I'm very happy to help you with your speech, but I'm a little surprised you may have gotten the date wrong because the date of your bat mitzvah is Parshat Tazria. And yet you wanted me to write for Kedoshim. Says, yes, our rabbi thought that Tazria wasn't a very nice parsha for girls, so we're going to do Kedoshim instead. All right, so clearly we don't operate in anything of that vein, but the truth is that the topic of Tzaraat is rarely touched upon, and there's yet another reason, is that this time of year is a time that we in the Edbiz refer to as the time of the Yoms. We have Yom HaShoah, we've already had. This coming week we have Yom HaZikaron and Yom HaTzma'ut. And as a result of that, school programming is always intensified in those directions. And as a result of that, also often the discussion that takes place in drashot in shuls and on the internet is about the modern state of Israel, is about chayalim, is about the Shoah, etc. And Tazria Metzora somehow gets somewhat conveniently buried. I say conveniently because, again, for many people, it's a topic that's uncomfortable. And when it is addressed, it's chiefly addressed from one perspective. And that is the perspective of Lashon Hara. We're going to look at that in the course of this year. But I'd like to take a little bit more of an energetic look at Tzaraat. And part of the reason, part of my motivation, is that I noticed last week, suddenly there was a lot of internet chatter, as they like to call it, about Metzora. And there was an interest in seeing whether or not people had material. I'm part of a number of different rabbinic groups, even though I'm not a shul rabbi, I have a lot of friends who are. And they were all asking each other for material on Tzaraat because they already felt that this particular year, because of quarantining and isolation, Sarat was a particularly meaningful topic. So I decided that I thought that would be a good topic for us to take, Parashat Tazria Metzora. We're going to take a look at it together, and here are the source sheets. Now, what we're going to look at is really Tzarat in three segments. The first segment, and I'll lay them out right now. The first segment is the causes of Tzarat, because we all recognize, and it's quite clear in the Torah, it's clear in the Nevi'im, it's clear in Chazal, that Tzarat is not something that you get because you didn't wear a mask and didn't wash your hands for 20 seconds. Tzarat is a spiritually generated affliction, meaning you get Tzarat because of something wrong that you did, a wrong behavior, a wrong attribute, and we have to see what that is. It's clear because of the cases we have in Tanakh where somebody gets Tzarat, there's always an almost immediate reaction or response to something that they did or said. That's one piece of the puzzle, is what actually causes Tzarat. What are the causes behind it? We have Chazal and we have the cases in Tanakh. We'll look at that briefly. Second thing is, I'd like to look at what Tzarat is, the manifestation of Tzarat, and how Chazal understand, and really taking a look at the Psukim, and how the Halakha formulates the status of a Mitzorah. It's something that we may find a little surprising. And the third component of the Shir is specifically relates to the issue of isolation. And I'm not going to give that part away because hopefully that'll be a little bit of a surprising twist that hopefully you will enjoy. Okay, let's start with the beginning. Part one is Gormei HaTzarat. What causes Tzarat? So we have a famous passage in Masechet Arachin, and we're going to go back to the Sugya in Arachin several times in the Shir. The Sugya in Arachin, and part of the reason for that is because Arachin in also deals with the issue of Batei, of Arei Choma, of walled cities, and Mitzoraz Meshulach Me'arei Choma. That's not the context of the Sugya here, but it's in Arachin. Is about a daf of a discussion, most of it agadic, about Lashon Hara. As a matter of fact, almost all the halachot that we have of Lashon Hara are found in this sugya. So in this sugya, Amar Shmuel bar Nachmani, Amar Rabbi Yonatan, Al Shiv'an Devarim Nega'im Ba'im. Nega'im come because of seven different things. That doesn't mean that somebody has to do all seven to get Nega'im. It means any one of these seven things could get you Nega'im. And Nega'im is a way of saying Tzarat. We're going to come back to that word in the third section. Al Lashon Hara, again, the most famous one, and Rabbi Shlakish's famous drasha on Zot Tihiyeh Torat HaMitzora, his drasha is Zot Tihiyeh Torat Motzi Shem Ra. Mitzora is like a conflated word of Motzi Shem Ra, of somebody who besmirches another person, who slanders another person. So the first cause is Lashon Hara, and that's, of course, the most famous one. V'al Shfichut Damim, and for murder. V'al Shavuat Shav, for taking a vain oath. V'al Gilui Arayot, and for forbidden sexual contact. And by the way, for every one of these, the Gemara then goes and brings Psukim. We didn't have room on the page for the Psukim, but Psukim to support this. V'al Gasut HaRuach, because of arrogance. V'al HaGezel, because of theft. V'al Tzarut HaAyin, and because of greediness or miserliness. Now, you'll notice that some of these things are outright crimes in the Torah, some of them punishable by very severe punishments like murder and sexual violations. Some of them are violations of the Torah without as extreme responses like Gezel and like Shvuat Shav. And one of them is certainly a prohibition, which is Lashon Hara, although it doesn't carry the same, at least earthly punishment. And then two of them seem to be about attitude, Gasut HaRuach, arrogance, and Tzarut HaAyin, miserliness. So there's a mixed bag here of very severe crimes, less severe crimes, lav shein bo maaseh, and then attitudes or midot. Okay. However, if we take a look through the stories in Tanakh where individuals are recorded as having Tzarat, we can find one constant theme throughout. So as you see here on the page, I didn't have room for the psukim here, I listed the five people by name who get Tzarat in Tanakh. We're going to talk about all the stories right now. And if you have a Tanakh available, I'll direct you to the relevant psukim. You can open it up. You can mark them down if you'd like, and then take a look later, and we'll see. But the truth is that there are nine different mitzoraim in Tanakh, or possibly eight. And that is because in the passage in Malachim Bet that tells the story about the four Metzoraim that saved the city of Shomron, the four Metzoraim are not named. So besides the five we have in front of us, there are four more. That's nine. Chazal say that those four were Gehazi, who's number four on our hit list, and his three sons. So there may be eight. Okay, eight people who got Tzara'at that are recorded in Tanakh. We have no idea how many more people. And of course, Chazal have all sorts of other people who got Tzara'at, including, on the one hand, Paro in a famous Midrash, and David HaMelech in a famous Midrash. But we're going to take a look at the ones who are listed explicitly as getting Tzara'at in Tanakh. And let's see if we can find a common theme. So the first one is Moshe. This is surprising and troubling for us, but where does Moshe get Tzara'at? So Moshe gets Tzara'at at the Sne, in Perek Dalet of Shemot, when Moshe continues to say to Hashem, I can't go, Paro won't listen, Bnei Yisrael won't listen, I can't talk, every possible reason to refuse his mission. And Hashem then, in the beginning of Perek Dalet, gives him signs. The first sign is the Mateh, Mazeh B'yadecha, Mateh, Moshe throws the stick to the ground. The stick becomes a snake or a serpent. Moshe then grabs it, becomes a stick again. And that's the first sign. What's the second sign? Moshe takes his hand, is told to take his hand, puts it under his arm, takes it out, and it's white as snow. He has Tzara'at. He then puts it back and brings it out, and it's healed again. And the idea is that they will believe if they don't believe the first sign, they'll believe the second sign. And then the third sign is take water and throw it on the ground. It'll turn to blood. Now, what's a curious thing about these three signs is that Hashem then tells Moshe in Perek Dalet later on, the signs that I told you to do for Bnei Yisrael, go do them before Paro also. And Moshe comes. And which of the signs does he do before Paro? He does the stick, the famous scene with the Chartumim, with the wizards. And he does the blood. That's the first makat, dam. Tzara'at he never does. So Tzara'at, perhaps we should understand, is not just being a sign, but maybe a sign for Moshe himself. And we'll see that. We're going to park it on the side for a moment. Moshe's Tzara'at is something we'll come back to at the end. The first famous mitzorah, and the only mitzorah'at in Tanakh, is of course Miriam. Rav Lichtenstein Zatzal once asked this question. He said, I learned this from my colleague, Rabbi Schallenberger. He said that he once asked a question, who was Ralph Branca and why is he like Miriam? So, of course, we all know who Ralph Branca is. For those of you who don't, Ralph Branca was a great pitcher for the Brooklyn Dodgers, but he's best known for pitching the pitch that Bobby Thompson hit and the Giants beat the Dodgers in 1951. All right, something that we here in LA still find painful. And the idea is Ralph Branca is somebody who was very, very good, but he's most famous for something wrong he did. You think about Miriam. Miriam was a great leader. She was a member of the leadership family. She played a critical role from the time that Moshe was born and on. And yet, what's she most known for? She was most known for her Tzara'at. Matter of fact, the Torah tells us, Zachor et asher asad reinecha Miriam, derchutzichem mitzrayim. Remember what Hashem did to Miriam, and that's the Tzara'at. So now let's see, what's the story with Miriam? What happened in that case? So you ask somebody, you say, why did Miriam get Tzara'at? And the immediate answer is Lashon Hara. So say, what's the Lashon Hara? What Lashon Hara did Miriam say? So if you look through the story, you actually find it kind of hard to identify Lashon Hara that Miriam said. But if you look at Hashem's response to Miriam and Aharon, you'll find out what the problem was. Miriam and Aharon say, or Miriam says, and Aharon seems to be concurring, or he's present, he doesn't protest. And Miriam says, Harak ach Moshe diber Adonai, halo gam banu diber. Did Hashem only speak to Moshe? He spoke to us also. Which means, in some sense, she's challenging Moshe's special status as a special Navi, saying we're also Navim. And so why should he be singled out? Unclear what the singling out is. We follow Rashi, it's that Moshe's wife separated, he separated from his wife, and the other Navim didn't, whatever it may be, but Moshe seems to be behaving as if his nevuah is of a special character. And we know that that's the problem because what's Hashem's answer? Hashem's answer to Miriam and Aharon is that Moshe's nevuah is different. Okay? We're going to come back to the story of Miriam. So that's the background of Miriam getting Tzara'at. Now, when the cloud leaves, Miriam is Tzara'at Kashaleg. She's white as snow with Tzara'at. Aharon turns to Moshe. Moshe prays to Hashem. And Hashem heals her. But of course, she has to spend 7 days outside of the Machaneh, and the rest, of course, then we move on in Jewish history. The next person that we hear about getting tzara'at is all the way in Sefer Malachim Bet. In Malachim Bet, excuse me, Parakeh, we hear the story of a non-Jew, a Syrian general, an Oved Avodah Zarah, as we'll hear in the story, named Naaman. And again, read it in Malachim Bet. By the way, the Miriam story is in Bamidbar Yod Bet. The Naaman story is in Malachim Bet Parakeh. And Naaman is a successful Syrian general, evidently the chief of staff of the king of Aram. And he has tzara'at. We're not told why he has tzara'at. Although a teacher of mine, Rav Elchanan Samet, suggested based on the story that we can understand why he got tzara'at. Well, I'll tell the story. So Naaman, in his house, there is a captured Jewish girl who was taken in an earlier raid from Israel. And she's working in his house. And she sees that he has tzara'at. And she says to the people in the house, Achalei Adoni, go beg from our Navi, that's Elisha, in Shomron, and he'll heal you from the tzara'at. One thing leads to another, and Naaman comes with gifts and soldiers and servants, and they all come to Elisha's house with a big entourage. And Naaman is waiting outside, sends a message for Elisha to come see him. And Elisha sends a message out, and the message is, tell Naaman to go dip in the Arden 7 times, and he'll become purified. And Naaman becomes outraged, and his sense is, Elisha should come out to me. And what does he want for me to go into the Arden? Yarden's a dinky river. We've got much better rivers up in Damascus, Amanau Parpar. And to Naaman's credit, one of his underlings says to him, you know, Davar Gadol Diber Navi. The Navi said something very important. Why don't you try it? So he goes into the Arden, he dips 7 times, comes out. His baby, his skin is fresh like a baby's skin. He's healed. He comes to Elisha, comes into the house to Elisha, and he offers him all of these gifts, and he says, I'm swearing off Avodah Zarah. I know there's only one God. And Elisha refuses to take the gifts. And Naaman is healed. Now notice, what was Naaman's attitude before this? It seems to be fairly straightforward. He was arrogant. He was haughty. What kind of prophet is this that doesn't come out to greet me, the big general? And notice that what healed him was a moment of humility when he accepted the advice of his servant, and he went into the Arden. And that's what changed things. Now watch what happens later on in that same story is Elisha has a servant named Gehazi. And Gehazi, who perhaps from an earlier story we're already not so thrilled with, Gehazi sees Naaman leave with all of his wealth, with all the gifts. So Gehazi on his own runs after him and tells him a story that we have suddenly some of the young prophet students have shown up and they're poor and they need something. Can you give me some gold, silver? So Naaman gives him more than he asked for, and Gehazi comes back with all of this wealth. And Elisha turns to him and says, where have you been? He says, I didn't go anywhere. He says, what do you mean? You think I don't know where you've been? You think this is a time to take gold and silver and gifts? And tzara'at Naaman tidbak b'cha. And he curses him that the tzara'at of Naaman will now be on you. And Gehazi leaves and he's at Mitzora. Okay, so we're going to go to our fifth example. And the only other fifth instance, the only other instance in Tanakh, and we'll come back and look at all of them. If you were to look at the list of kings of Yehuda and ask which of them, I'm not going to say are good king or bad king, that's a little bit simplistic, but which of them are kings that we feel were religious role models and which were not? So clearly, David we hold as a religious role model. Clearly, Yoshiyahu and Chizkiyahu we hold as a religious role model. Another one that we like, and the text likes, both in Malachim and Divrei Yamim, is a king named Azariah or Uzziahu, in the middle of the 8th century, beginning of the 8th century BCE. And Uzziahu, who rules for over 50 years, is a strong king. He loves to build. He builds lots of things in Israel. Vayivan Uzziahu Migdalim Yushalayim by Chazkem, famous song that many of us grew up with. That's Uzziahu. And in Sefer Malachim, we're told that Uzziahu at some point became a Mitzora and spent the rest of his kingdom. We don't know how long. We don't know at what point in his rule he became a Mitzora. He spent the rest of his rule ruling from outside the city, the Beit HaChofshit. And his son, Yotam, was the regent who ran the kingdom until Uzziahu died. But in Divrei HaYamim Bet, we get the full story of Uzziahu. What happened? Uzziahu was a very powerful king, a very strong king. Uchezkato, and when he felt that he was very strong, he suddenly decided, remember, he's from Shevet Yehuda, he decides to go into the Beit HaMikdash and offer up the Ketoret. And so Uzziahu goes in, and he's surrounded by Kohanim, we're trying to keep him out, and then he takes the Mikteret, the fire pan, and he's going to put it on the Mizbeach, and they say, no, Uzziahu, it's not for you to do it, it's for Bnei Aharon HaKohanim, and he puts it on anyways, and the Ketoret goes up, and the minute he puts it on, Hatzarat Zarcha B'mitzcho, the Tzarat, and this is a little bit alliteration, Zarcha B'mitzcho, it spread all over his forehead, they immediately got him out of the Mikdash, and that was where his Tzarat came from. So what is Uzziah guilty of? It's fairly straightforward. Uzziah is guilty of, and this is where Chazal identified Gasut HaRuach, is with Uzziahu, of arrogance, of saying, I know better. I'm the strong king. Nobody can stop me. I can do anything I want. I'm going to, after all, I'm going to go into the Mikdash and act like a Kohen. Think about Gehazi. What was it Gehazi, who is a servant of Elisha, the great Navi? Gehazi is arrogant, and he thinks, I know better than my master. What's the right thing to do? It is right to take the money and the gifts from Naaman. Think about Naaman. Naaman himself, we met him. We saw an arrogant person, and he was healed when he became humble. Now let's go to Miriam, and this is a little more troubling. But Miriam was essentially challenging God's selection. God chose to treat Moshe differently than the other Nevi'im. And Miriam was challenging it based on what we might call a logical argument. Well, Moshe, Hashem talks to Moshe, Hashem talks to us, what's the difference? And Hashem answers, hey, there is a difference, right? Avdi Lochein, Avdi Moshe. Moshe is my servant. Moshe is very close to me, and I do treat him differently. And so Miriam, in a sense, at this point, is really guilty of the same thing, Gasut HaRuach. And now let's go back, and this is the most troubling one, most difficult for us, but think about the dialogue that takes place at the Sneh. Moshe comes, and Hashem says to him, Ani Hashem, I've seen the affliction of my people in Mitzrayim, and I'm going to come down, and I'm going to save them, pull them out, and till the first 11 sukkim, that's all fine. Moshe's an onlooker. And then Hashem says, V'atalech, you go and you do it. And from then on, there's a series of refusals on Moshe's part, which are based on Bnei Yisrael won't listen to me, Paro won't listen to me, I don't know how to talk, I don't know your name, all sorts of explanations, until finally Moshe, out of excuses, says, Shlach na biyati shlach, send somebody else. And then by Haraf Adonai Moshe, God gets angry at Moshe and says, okay, Aharon will go, but it's not God's choice, meaning that's not what God ideally wanted. He wanted Moshe to go. Moshe refused to go. And in a sense, Moshe is saying, I know that Bnei Yisrael won't listen to me. I know that Paro won't listen to me. I know that they're going to ask for this. I know they're going to want that. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, go. Well, at that point, you should really say, you know what, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know better than I'll go. Now, we know that it's the way of Nevi'im, the greatest of Nevi'im, Yeshayahu, Yirmiyahu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Moshe, right, Moshe, Yonah, in a different sense, who don't want to go, don't want to take that mission. But this statement of Moshe is not so much saying that I'm not worthy, but they won't listen, it won't work. And in a sense, there's a certain amount of haughtiness there, and the sign is Tzarat. And notice Tzarat is the one of the otot that Moshe does not reproduce for Paro. Okay, so that's part one, that even though the Chazal tell us that there's seven different things for which Tzarat will happen, nonetheless, they all seem to coalesce, and all the cases in Tanakh that we have seem to coalesce around the issue of Gasut HaRuach, and Chazal later on say that Lashon Hara itself is an expression of Gasut HaRuach, is an expression of haughtiness. Nagbir Sfatenu, Miadon Lanu. Okay, that's part one. Part one, Gasut HaRuach. Part two is what a Mitzora is. And Chazal have a statement we're familiar with, that there are four kinds of people who are alive and yet they're considered dead. And one of them is a Mitzora Chashuv Kmeit. So in this section of the Shir, over the next 15 minutes or so, I'd like to kind of demonstrate that in the Psukim, that this notion that Chazal have of a Mitzora being like a dead person is something that's really seriously anchored right in the text. All right, let's start with this. As we know, after the dedication of the Mishkan, the Torah then gives us, the Hashem gives Moshe, a series of mitzvot that have to do with Tumah v'Tahara. And they start with Tumah v'Tahara of animals, and that's all of chapter 11. And then it goes to Tumah v'Tahara of people, which is chapters 12 through 15. And 12 has to do with childbirth. 13 and part of 14 have to do with Sarat, and then Sarat of houses. And 15 have to do with Zav and Zavah and Nidah. Okay. Chapter 12, which is the very short parak about it, you let it start. So when a woman gives birth, so she is tmeah for 7 days, right? Keep in mind 7 days. And later on in that parasha, again, trying to save space, but later on in that parasha, we're told that she brings a cane. A cane is two birds along with an olah. She brings a bird along with a lamb for an olah. If she can't afford the lamb, she brings two birds. That's the poor woman's offering as a yoledet. Kan yoledet, the cane of a yoledet, the nest of a yoledet. And that's immediately followed by the parsha of nigaim. Right? Now, what is nigaim? A person has scabbing of different sorts, lesions on their head that look like a burn or scabbing from boils or any of these things on their head. And that's what Sarah is. Think about the way that it's described in the story of Miriam. And we'll look at that pasuk in a minute. Aaron turns to Moshe and says to Moshe, when Miriam is mitzorat, he says, "Al na tihi kameit, let her not be like a dead person. She is mitzorat kashel, and she's white as snow." What it means is that skin is dead. It's dead skin. And so it's as if we've gone from a yoledet, a woman giving birth to new life, and the next thing is a person who's experiencing a form of mini-death while alive. Now, watch the interesting thing. In Parshat Mitzorah, the second half of what we'll read this Shabbat, privately in our homes, we're told about Taharat HaMitzorah, how a Mitzorah becomes purified. We're told that a Mitzorah has to bring three korbanot, and then V'im Dalhu, let's say he's poor, V'ein Yado Maseget, and he cannot afford it. What does he do? In any case, he has to bring one lamb as an asham, and the mincha. Or two birds, which was able to offer. In other words, he's bringing the same offering as a yoledet. Now, this is a mitzorah when he's become purified, which means that he had sarat, and then the kohen came and confirmed it, and he became quarantined in his house for 7 days. And 7 days later, the kohen came, and one of three things happened. This is all in Masechet Nigaim. We'll come back to that word. And the kohen comes to him after 7 days, and one of three things happens. Either the kohen says, "You're tahor," or the kohen says, "Stay another week," or "You're muchlat, you have to leave town. You have to go outside of the city limits, leave the machaneh." And when he's all completed with that, meaning he has become declared pure, then at that point, the process that he goes through, which is with the tziporim, etc., concludes with him bringing these korbanot, which are very much like the korban of a yoledet. Interesting, because there's something else that happens. A mitzorah is completely shaved as part of his ceremony. Every bit of hair on his body is taken off. And think about that. Here's somebody who has been outside of the city, who hasn't been able to get a haircut, who has been behaving like an avel. Take a look in the halachot, the third parak of Moed Katan. And now suddenly, he is totally shaved, he goes into the mikvah, he comes out of the mikvah, and brings this korban, very similar to the korban of a yoledet. It's almost as if he's been born again. That's an uncomfortable term for us, but it's as if he's new life. Maybe that's a little more comfortable. And notice that the same kind of ceremony happens when one time in history, the Levim were sanctified as Levim in source 6, so this elevation of regular people into the viyah, kind of like a new identity, the mitzorah has a new identity. He's suddenly a new person. And now you can understand why Chazal say the following. When Aaron says to Moshe, "Please pray for Miriam, al na tihi kameit, let her not be like a dead person." What's Aaron looking at? He's looking at his sister, and her skin is white, completely white. She looks like a dead person, which is why I titled this section Dead Man Walking. A Dead Man Walking, something taken from the world of prisons. And where they say when a person is already on death row and they're on their way to being executed, dead man walking. But that's what Metzorai is. Let's step back for a second, and we'll look at source 7 again. Let's step back a second. All of Tum'ah v'Tahara, purity and impurity, stem from where? Well, a person who died, and that is an Avi Avota Tum'ah, and anybody who was inside the room with a dead person or who touched the dead person is an Avatumah, and then they can carry it further. A dead animal, a dead sheretz, the emissions of a zav, or we're going to keep Mitzorah out of this for a minute. Those are all sources of tuma. But think about it. The only living person who's an essential source of tuma is a Mitzorah. Now you're going to say, so is a zav. Not exactly. So the difference is with a zav, you have to have direct contact with the zav or something the zav touched. The Mitzorah is an interesting halacha, and we see that in source 7. Anati kamet, mahamet mitame ba'ohel af mitzorah mitame bevia. Just like a mate has a tum'ah that is more powerful, in a sense, than any other tum'ah, in that it can generate tum'ah without direct contact. If you're under the same roof, under the same tree branch, under the same eve as a dead body, you're tamei. You're an av hatumah for 7 days and need mechatat, etc. A mitzorah has the same thing. When a mitzorah enters a house, the house now, anybody in the house becomes tamei. And so a mitzorah is as if the person's dead, but they're walking around. Now let's think what that means. On the one hand, we could say what a terrible affliction this is. What an awful thing to have these lesions and then to have be in, under investigation, then to be under quarantine, and then suddenly to be in isolation outside of the city. What an awful thing. On the other hand, we can look at it very differently. And by the way, perspective is becoming a very critical matter in how we deal with this very troubling period. We can look at it and say, here's somebody who essentially was supposed to die. Ha'atzum, with his tremendous compassion, said, you know what, I'm going to give you a little taste of what you should have gotten and take it to heart. And you start with this. Start by going into isolation in your own house, quarantine. Think about that. That doesn't work and it gets worse. You have to leave town. And of course, this fits in so much with the list that we saw at the beginning of this section of what sort of things, at the beginning of the shiur, what sort of things caused tzarat. And chief among them that we always consistently talk about is Lashon Hara. And think about the propriety of this, the poetic justice of this, the rectitude of it. A person speaks Lashon Hara, they sow mistrust and anger and hatred among people. So what happens? They get removed from people. You can't be around society. You're unhealthy for society. And so the notion is go outside of the city and sit by yourself and take time to think about how your behavior brought this on yourself. Don't blame somebody else, blame yourself. Take responsibility, acknowledge your own role in this, do tshuva, and then you can return. That's a critical piece of the whole picture of tzarat. So now we're going to turn to the last section. And the last section has to do with Mitzrayim. Parenthetically, if anybody's interested in getting a copy of these source sheets, just ask Rabbi Kelman, and he'll forward me your email. I'll send them to you. Be happy to do so. I found something interesting this year in looking at the Parsha of Tzarat. We think about the affliction as Tzarat. That's the word we use. And Tzarat, which is mistranslated into leprosy or Hansen's disease, it's not. It's some sort of a skin affliction, which doesn't necessarily have a name that we're familiar with. We're not exactly sure. But Tzarat is not the name that's used usually in the Parsha. There's a word that's used, and it's such a significant word in the context of this Parsha that that the name of the Masechet that deals with the laws of Tzara'at is called by that name. And the word is Nega'im. Now, a nega, which comes from the word to touch, a nega is an affliction. For God to touch you is an affliction. And the word nega is a word that shows up, and I have it here on the page, 78 times in Tanakh as a noun or a verb. Meaning besides the word to touch, but nega is an affliction, or the verb vayinaga or vayinagu shows up a total of 78 times in Tanakh. Not a very rare word. It's a pretty common word. That's not true. It's a very rare word. Why? Because 61 of the times that it shows up in Tanakh, it shows up in these two chapters, Yud Gimel Yud Aleph. That's pretty astounding. That means there's only 17 times in the whole rest of Tanakh that it shows up. Now, in some of them, it's in poetry, Kol Nega, Kol Machala, in Shlomo's Tefillah of the Beit HaMikdash, which shows, of course, twice in Malachim and Divrei Amim, and Ish Nege Levavo, also twice, once in Malachim, once in Divrei Amim, also in Shlomo's Tefillah. So that's four of them right there. But it's interesting where Nega shows up. Nega shows up first in Sefer Bereishit, one time. Shows up in Sefer Shmot a second time. Shows up in Vayikra 61 times. Shows up in Dvarim 4 times. I'm going to talk about those right now. The 4 times it shows up in Dvarim are all in the context of Tzara'at, meaning when you come to the Kohanim, when you have a question, Ben Dim Ladin, Ben Dam Ladam, Ben Din Ladin, Uve Nega La Nega. That's two of them, by the way. And you have a question, you're unclear about whether Nega is Tahor or Tameh. Okay. And in Parshat Ki Teitze, when the Torah warns us regarding, remember what happened to Miriam, it says, Hishamer b'nega hatzarat. Be very careful to guard the nega tzarat, the prohibition against cutting off a nega, cutting off a tzarat. So it's nega tzarat in Dvarim. Later on, Nevi'im, several other examples, but in Bereishit, the only time that that word shows up is it shows up twice, once as a verb, once as a noun, in source 9. Curious. Avraham, we all know the story, comes to Canaan, and Avraham immediately experiences a famine, or at some point experiences a famine, and goes down to Mitzrayim. We're all familiar with the story. Avraham is concerned that Sarai is going to be taken by Paro and he'll be killed, and that they don't want to commit adultery, but they don't mind committing murder. That's all partial by itself. And so therefore, Avraham asks Sarai to say that they are brother and sister and not married, and to save his life, and Sarai is taken by Paro. Sarai is taken into Paro's house, and we hear one pasuk right here, pasuk 9, in Bereishit Yudbet, pasuk Yud Zayin, Vayenaga Adonai Paro Nega'in Gedolim Vet Beito. Aldvar Sarai Ishet Avram. This is the first time the word Nega shows up, and shows up twice in the pasuk, a verb and a noun. Hashem afflicts Paro with afflictions. Now, we don't know what those afflictions are, although they're midrashim, that it was tzarat, but tremendous afflictions, hu paro ve'et beito. We're going to come back to that later on, because of Sarai Shet Avram. Now, by the way, the same story happened with Avimelech in Perek Chaf, when Sarai was taken by, Sarai at the time was taken by Avimelech, and yet we don't hear the word Nega'im. Right? We say, Sarai, Sarai, Adonai, bi'ad korech le'beit Avimelech, but we don't hear Nega'im. You hear Nega'im only here. The second time the word Nega shows up is in the story of Yitziat Mitzrayim. And after the 9 plagues, we have Hashem speaking to Moshe after Choshech. Vayomer Adonai Moshe, Od Nega Echad Aviyam Paro Aviyam Mitzrayim. Acherechein Yishalach Etchem Mizeh. Kishal Lecho Kala Garesh Yigaresh Etchem Mizeh. Hashem says to Moshe, I'm going to bring one more nega on Paro and on Mitzrayim. Notice that on Paro and on Mitzrayim. Keep that term, that phrase in mind. Al Paro v'al Mitzrayim. And then he will send you out from here, totally sending you out. And that's Makat B'chorot. So that means the very first time you hear the word nega, it's in the context of Hashem protecting Sarai from Paro and Mitzrayim, Paro and his house. I said we'd get back to that, so just a little bit of Egyptology. The word Paro, which you know is a title, it's not a name. We have Paro with name, Paro Ramses, we have Paro Necho, Paro Chafra, we have Paro with Paronim with different names. Paro is a title. Paro is Egyptian for big house, Paro, big house, which is why the motif of the house plays such a critical role in the whole story of Mitzrayim. Mi Beit Avadim. Selabayit. So much about the house. Vayas lahem batim. So many houses throughout the whole Egyptian narrative because Paro is the big house. We're going to come back to this in a minute because of the nature of Egypt, the way that it's presented in the Torah. Now, when this nega echad, the power that Hashem is going to bring on Paro and Mitzrayim, the nega of Makat Bechorot, that he's going to bring to Mitzrayim, is about to happen, Hashem commands us famously to come into the houses and to prepare the Korban Pesach. And the first 20 psukim of Perek Yud Bet present for us the laws of the Pesach, both for that generation, for that year, and for future generations. In Pasuk Chaf Aleph, Moshe turns to the people and gives them the command about it. Right? And he tells them, okay, and then, Pasuk Chaf Bet, Ulukachtem Agudat Ezov. I want to think about that. Agudat Ezov. What's Agudat Ezov? A bunch of hyssop. By the way, where else does hyssop show up? It shows up in two places. It shows up in the context of preparing the Mechatat for the Parah Aduma, and it shows up in the context of the purification of the Metzorah. Again, a connection between Metzorah and death. All right, so now, take a bunch of hyssop, utfaltem badam asher basaf, dip it into the blood that's in the cup, and then bring it to the lintel and to the two doorposts, min adam asher basaf, from the blood that's in there, and then v'atem lo tetzu ish mipetach beito ad boker. You are not to leave your doorway, leave your house until morning. You have to stay inside the house. You're sequestered, okay, in the house till morning. In the meantime, v'avar adonai l'ngofen Mitzrayim. Hashem is going to pass through and afflict Egypt. Here it's not nega, but l'ngofen Mitzrayim. Okay, and Hashem is going to pass through and see the dam and pass over your houses or protect your houses. Two meanings to the word pasach, and the magefa will not afflict you in the house. Ushmartem etatavar hazeh, and this is a difficult pasuk. Keep this as an everlasting law for you and your children. What's the this? What is it you're going to keep forever? It's a very strange phrase. And the Rishonim kind of struggle with understanding what's this chok? Is it chok HaPesach? But these laws aren't forever. The law of staying in the house all night, the law of the blood on the doorposts, all of these are laws that are only for that year of that year in Mitzrayim. Future years, Pesach is going to be very different. Take a look in the Mishnah, in Perek Tet of Masachet Pesachim, about Mam in Pesach Mitzrayim and Pesach Dorot. The 1 year Pesach and Pesach forever, very different laws, right? So keep that in mind, and we're going to come back to that question at the end of the shiur. Now, this is the attack on Mitzrayim. What is the attack on Mitzrayim? So let's go back to the beginning of Moshe's interactions with Paro. When Moshe comes back to the new Paro, meaning when Moshe was gone, the Paro that Moshe grew up with as an adopted father or whatever has died, and Moshe comes back and faces the new Paro, which one he is, I'm not going to get into the Machloka the chronologit, the dispute about when the years, etc. And he comes to Paro and it says, Adonai Elohei Avrim Nikra Aleinu. Hashem, the God of the Hebrews, encountered us. He wants us to come out to the desert to worship him. What's Paro's response? Vayomer Paro, and I'm going to give it some voice. Mi Adonai Asher Shma Bekolo. L'shalach Yisrael. Who is this Hashem that I should listen to his voice and let Yisrael go? Lo yadati et Adonai v'gam Yisrael lo ashaleach. I don't know this Hashem. I'm not going to let Yisrael go. Listen to the voice. Listen to the words because they're right there in the words even without my voice. This is sopping arrogance, seeping, strong arrogance. I don't know who this Hashem is. I'm not going to listen to him. I got no interest. And interesting is that the model, the archetype of what Egypt is, throughout Tanakh, is arrogance. In Yechezkel, almost at the other end of biblical history, meaning from Mitzrayim to Yechezkel is a few hundred years. Mitzrayim is the beginning of biblical history, Ki'ilu, not the beginning, but almost the beginning. And Yechezkel is near the end of the era of prophecy. And what does Yechezkel say when told to give nivuah against Egypt? Ben Adam, sim panecha paro melech mitzvayim v'inaveh alav v'al mitzvayim kulo. Kula. Hashem says to Yechezkel in Perek Chavtet, give prophecy against Egypt. Daber v'al marta. This is what you should say. Ko amar Adonai Elohim. Maybe you're familiar with this from the Haftarah. Hini alecha paro melech mitzvayim. I'm going to come after you, paro melech mitzvayim. Again, it's not just Paro, it's Paro Melech Mitzrayim. Paro u Mitzrayim, Mitzrayim u Paro. Paro is identified with Mitzrayim. This character trait of Paro, even if an individual Paro was different, Paro as a type is the arrogant type and Mitzrayim is the arrogant country. Hatanim hagadol aravet betoch yorav. Paro, the big serpent who wallows through the Nile, asher amar li yo'riv ani asitini. Who says, I am the Yor. I made it myself. Paro claims, I am the creator. Mi Hashem. And think about what the message that Moshe continues to bring to the Mitzrayim throughout the Makot is, Vidatem Keni Hashem. Keni Hashem Bekerav Haaretz. I am Hashem. I am Hashem here in the land. Ein Kamoni B'chol Haaretz. There's none like me in the land. That the instruction that the Mitzrayim have to get, and chiefly that Paro has to get and his courtiers, is Hashem exists, Hashem has power here in the land, and Hashem has the supreme power in the land. And something that Paro resists the whole time until finally he accepts it, which means Mitzrayim is the archetype of arrogance. Now, when you think about what the experience of Yetziat Mitzrayim was about, the experience of Yetziat Mitzrayim was about us staying sequestered in a house. You'd say, well, that sounds an awful like Tzaraat. That doesn't sound anything like Tzaraat. Let's think about the difference. Before going there, I want to take a look at two more statements of Chazal, number 15 and 16. 14, we already saw at the beginning of this year. Number 15, Amar Bichamar Chanina Mata Kanatoshim Asapre Lashon Hara. So what should somebody who's fallen into the very bad trait of Lashon Hara speaking, what should they do to fix it? Im Tamid Chacham Hu Yasok B'Torah. If he's a scholar and capable of doing it, involve himself in Torah. Torah makes you humble. You realize you are engaging in the wisdom of Atik Yomin, the wisdom of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Imam Aretzu, if you're somebody who's not capable of studying, Yashpil Da'ato, humble yourself. In other words, Lashon Hara is about arrogance, and the fix for that is humility. And one step further is Amar Rabbi Yocham, Shum Rabbi Yosef and Zimra, Kolam Saper Lashon Hara, Kilu Kafar Ba'ikari, based on a Pasuk and Tehillim, that somebody who speaks Lashon Hara, it says as if they have denied the existence of God. Exactly what we heard about Paro. Paro is the essence of this, which may be why Chazal have the midrash that Paro got Tzaraat, the Paro before got Tzaraat, and was slaughtering Jewish kids to bathe in their blood, etc. A very famous midrash that Rashi quotes. But this is that Paro typifies this gasut haruach, and gasut haruach is what causes Tzaraat. So let's take a look at it. What are we commanded to do during Makat Bechorot? We are commanded to gather together, to stay together in our houses. What is it that the Metzorah is commanded to do? The Metzorah is commanded to Badad Yeshev Mechutz L'machaneh Moshavo, right? That the Metzorah is obligated, you see it here in source 8, in the big print, to stay alone outside of the camp. Essentially, somebody who's gotten Tzaraat has become a Mitzri. Somebody who's gotten Tzaraat can't be in the house anymore. They got to be outside. They can't be in the house of Machane Yisrael. They have to go outside and be isolated from B'nai Yisrael, because it's only the people who stay inside the house, who stay inside the house with the dam on the door and stay inside the house with the Korban Pesach inside and with the family together, who are the ones who are saved. And so it seems that the laws of Tzaraat, the whole structure of Tzaraat, in a sense, is a zecher l'mitzrayim. Not a zecher l'itziat mitzrayim, a zecher l'mitzrayim. It's a way of remembering the experience of Mitzrayim and keeping cognizant of the consequences of Mitzorah as a way of making sure not to fall into the trap of thinking like the Mitzrayim. The Torah warns us over and over, and Moshe warns us in Dvarim several times, not to let our heart get haughty, not to think we come to this land and we're the ones who built it, and we're the ones who did it, not to recognize and to think, it's my own strength, it's not my strength, it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we have to be careful. And some of the Rishonim even count this as a lota, say, not to violate the law of v'ram levavcha, of letting your heart get high, get haughty, and forget about Hashem. And that seems to be tied in with the whole issue of tzaraat. So we come back to the pasuk in source 11, the very difficult pasuk, and I like to suggest, just as a possibility, an interpretation of this pasuk, in source 11, lukachtem agudat ezov, again, take an agudat ezov, and again, remember, agudat ezov is used for purification from death. Paraduma mitzora, and here it's the potential death of makat bechorot. Lukachtem agudat ezov, utvaltem badam asher basav, yatem ashkof yashtem zezot, which combines two components of the paraduma ritual, by the way, and of the mitzora, who has the dam put on his ear and on his thumb and on his toe, three spots, just like in the house of Mitzrayim. You don't go into seclusion. You don't go in isolation. You stay with your family. You stay inside. Don't leave to go be alone. Stay with your family. In the meantime, God will afflict Mitzrayim. To see the blood there. He will pass over and he won't allow the destroyer to come in and hurt. Keep this matter. Keep this matter to heart. Teach your children about it. Keep this awareness of the significance of staying together and of staying together in the house, but in staying together as being the antidote to the attitude of Mitzrayim, which ultimately would lead you to Badad Yeshev, Michutz Lamachaneh, Moshavo. You know, there are two ways, almost infinite number of ways, but two broad ways in which we could look at this period. We could look at it as a time in which, and for some people it truly is, in which we're really isolated, people who are living alone, often people who are elderly and are living alone. It's very difficult and it's a really challenging time. And we do everything we can to help with the phone and Zoom and keeping in touch and going outside and having conversations through the window, whatever's safe. But there's also another way to look at it. For those of us, at least, who are blessed to have family members together, this is a chance to spend more time with our family. And there's a chance to come closer to our family and to learn about each other more and to shut the outside world out a little bit. The Shabbatot are like that. And perhaps if we take a little bit of that to heart, and the lesson of the Mitzora in the context of Mitzrayim, perhaps this can be an opportunity and not just a period of tremendous challenge. I want to wish everybody safety and health and a wonderful Shabbat Shalom. And Yirtzeh Hashem, soon we'll all be able to gather together and study face-to-face without the technological interface. But in the meantime, I want to thank Rabbi Kelman for benefiting us and allowing us to study Torah together through this vehicle. Okay, Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you very much, Rabbi. Thank you very much. Very interesting, and like you say, a very, very difficult and obscure topic that we do like to avoid and putting it into context. Thank you. Next year, as I'm giving tomorrow morning, 9:30 a.m. on Pirkei Avot, and next week we have a whole lineup of shiurim. We look forward to learning with you, everybody. Shabbat Shalom. Be well, be healthy, and all the best. Thank you very much. Laila Tov.